Good afternoon. You are tuned to a Juno Afternoon here for Friday, the 25th of September in the year 2015. Jeff Brown, your host for today. We'll get a preview of this weekend's Femme Fatale drag show. We'll talk with the author Seth Tanner about his new book, Swallowed by the Great Land. And we'll hear about a new nature-based program for young people. That Writer's Almanac, Burnout Music, and more today on a Juno Afternoon. Well, the forecast for tonight, numerous showers predicted for this evening, then rain later on with low temperatures around 45 degrees. Saturday, cloudy skies, high temperatures around 49 degrees. Sunday, more rain. Wednesday through Thursday, looks like rain is likely.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A conference taking place in Montana this weekend is drawing protests from area Native Americans and human rights organizations. Amy Martin has more.
The conference is sponsored by Citizens Equal Rights Alliance. Elaine Willman, the former chairman of the board, is organizing it. She says she believes that in most communities, Native Americans and whites used to get along well.
Throughout the 1900s, by and large, their kids went to school together, they all played on ball teams together. Life was good when everybody knew the bright lines and had mutual respect.
According to Willman, it's only relatively recently that problems have emerged.
I think the turning point was the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act. All of a sudden, great big money started coming into these tribes. And with that money was kind of a new power.
Dustin Monroe, a graduate student at the University of Montana and a member of the Blackfeet and Assiniboine tribes, sees things differently.
We're not back in the 1930s. We're in modern day, and we can all work together.
Monroe is helping to lead a protest against the Citizens Equal Rights Alliance, saying he believes the group is anti-Indian and is trying to divide Montanans based on race. The Montana Human Rights Network and other organizations have also issued statements expressing concern about the conference.
We want to let our elected officials, our county commissioners, any kind of person that's elected or a community leader up there, let them know that we do see what they're doing, and we're not going to take it in our state.
The conference and the protest will be held in Kalispell tomorrow. For National Native News, I'm Amy Martin.
The Iroquois Confederacy's lacrosse team faces the United States tonight in the semifinals of the World Indoor Lacrosse Championships. The event's being held in New York, as North Country Public Radio's David Summerstein reports.
The Iroquois Nationals largely sailed through the preliminary rounds, ending with a convincing 17-4 victory over the Czech Republic. The Nationals are led by the four Thompson brothers from Onondaga. Shelley Burnham Shognosh, a fan from Six Nations in Canada, says the Thompsons are ambassadors for the sport that was created by the Iroquois.
It's incredible that four brothers could be playing on a team, and the excitement of them being very traditional young men. They are excellent role models for our kids.
This marks the first time an indigenous territory has hosted a major international championship. The Iroquois Nationals are hoping they can finally defeat their nemesis, Canada, who's taken the gold the last three times. The final match is Sunday afternoon. For National Native News, I'm David Summerstein on the Onondaga Nation.
Working groups addressing energy needs in Indian Country laid out priorities today for the coming year for the U.S. Secretary of Energy. Tribal leaders from across the country took part in a three-day energy summit in Washington, D.C., which ends today. The summit focused on energy policy, science and technology, economy and regulation, and jobs and the workforce. Jana Gagnon, a tribal energy director, talked about recommendations for policy and programs. Findings include funding through the Loan Guarantee Program at $100 million for projects, capacity building at the tribal level, and tribal tax credits. Arctic issues were among the group's priorities. Federal plans include renewable energy and energy efficiency.
We need to support our Alaska Native communities as this Arctic strategy is developed, and we need a holistic approach to make sure that our efforts there are sustainable and help improve the lives of the communities that are already there.
High energy and high living costs are among issues facing Alaska Native communities. Working groups say there needs to be consultation and coordination with tribes. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. For 45 years, NARF has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes after the hour, and you are tuned to Juno Afternoon. Guests in the studio for the first part of the show, Ivana, Heather, Hank, and Callie here from the 4A's and also from Anchorage here to talk about the 4A's annual fundraiser drag show, Femme Fatale, is going on tonight and tomorrow night. Thanks for coming to the station, everybody.
Thank you for having us.
How would you define a drag? Actually, first of all, let's talk with Heather. What are the 4A's?
So the 4A's... is the Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association, and we provide services for people who are living with HIV and AIDS, and then we also do HIV prevention work out in the community. And we have an office in Anchorage, and then we have an office here in Juneau, which serves all of Southeast Alaska. And the fundraiser we're doing tonight is to provide services in Southeast Alaska.
And where is it being held?
Tonight, we're at the Rendezvous. Doors open at 7, and the event starts at 8:30, and then that's a local diva show. Tomorrow night, we're at the Rockwell, and again, the doors open at 7, and the event starts at 8:30. We have VIP tickets on sale for $30, which gets you a table and right at the stage, and then we have regular general admission tickets for $20.
And those are available online?
Those are available online, yeah.
And how do they get there? How do they get there?
They can go to the Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association website, www.alaskanaids.org.
All right. We have some Femme Fatales here in the studio here, Ivana and Hank and Callie. What is a drag show?
What is a drag show? Oh. It is a lot of fun. Yes.
That's a word.
It is a lot of fun, a lot of work. It's true, getting ready for it. And it is a lot of prep, and it is a lot of lip syncing. Yes.
Sometimes we do live numbers, and it's just everything is about the show, about engaging with the audience and just having a blast and forgetting about, you know, what all our problems and just having a good time with our fellow performers and the audience, entertaining.
And we get to become someone else, which is fantastic.
Alter ego.
Mm-hmm.
Our alter egos, yeah.
How did it get started? What's the history behind it?
Well, we all have independent different stories as far as how we started drag. I started drag just putting a wig on, and I was offered a slot in a show. Hey, do you want to come audition for us? And you look pretty cute in makeup, and I love being on stage, and I love entertaining, and love dancing around, and it just felt right, and I just started doing it, and now it's a part of my life. Every weekend I just go out and have fun and entertain people, and every time I get in that stage and the spotlight's on me, I forget about Andrew, and Ivana comes out and she's always having a blast. She's all about, you know, being that
she's a showstopper.
She's
right
a
there
showstopper. Yeah.
I feel like drag has always been a way of bringing not only the LGBT community together, but the community in general together. It's a place where anyone can go to escape from the world and be united as a whole group of people just looking to enjoy a really good night.
I think sometimes that drag is the face of the LGBT community as well. And we are out there, we are performing, and we unify, I think, a lot of people.
We're certainly one of the many faces of the LGBTQ.
Mm-hmm.
How did it get started as an art form?
Boy, years and years ago. Goodness.
There have been so many versions of drag. I think it always started with impersonating some type of celebrity or a singer. But in this generation, it's more so about what you feel is part of what you identify with. So there's things like androgyny. There's drag drag queens who dress and look like female, but you can't even tell, which we call fishy. and there's just a lot of
variety
for the drag generation.
How do you develop a character?
Well, I can speak to that. The character I play is Hank, and my real name is Heather, and so it has been a long process developing Hank. He used to be not so well put together, just like eyeshadow on his face to look like a little bit of a, you know, beard. But it took years of figuring out exactly how to look like a guy and to pull that off. And it takes years of looking at other guys, looking at other drag kings, and just figuring out what works. And I'm still growing and changing, and it's a never-ending process.
It's very true. When you first get into drag, either drag queen or drag king,
mm-hmm.
You think that you know what you're going for or what you're starting at. And then 2 years later, you look back and you're like, I can't believe that was me. And look at where I am. I now look like a female. And mm-hmm. back then, I would have never thought that I looked that way. So it's all a process and discovering yourself on who you really are or who this character really is.
Where do you get supplies? And what kind of specialized supplies are there?
I personally go to Value Village, and I get most of my guy clothes from Value Village. And there is a plethora of guy clothes for me to choose from at Value Village. I know other people go there as well.
So for us as drag queens, We go to, there's plenty of supplies to choose from. We usually go to Home Depot to buy our cushion foam for our hips and our butts because we have to assimilate this female figure that us males don't have. And we also have to get makeup, which is really expensive. So I personally myself opt to get the drugstore kind because it's really cheap and it's just, you know, in every corner. So I go to Walgreens, I go to CVS, and I just grab as much as I can. There's glue. You mentioned it, duct tape.
We go through a lot of duct tape.
Packaging tape.
I imagine TSA really likes you people.
They love us.
That's a process, yeah.
Kelly Abbott, how do you develop your character?
How did I develop my character? She's actually very new. I didn't start doing drag until last December. But she, I would say, is a very goofy, eccentric, in-your-face kind of person. But she's goofy.
And how long does it take you to get ready each night for your show?
For drag, I know it varies for some type of people, and it depends on the look that you're going for. But for my persona specifically, it takes about almost 5 hours. So 4 to 5 hours, I would say.
Wow.
It starts with, you know, the shaving of the face, moisturizing the face, deciding what look you're going to go for, covering the brows with glue, foundation. It's a whole huge process.
I mean, if you think about it, it's layers upon layers upon layers because you have to take this boyish face away and then transform it into what that female you impersonated is going to look like.
It's definitely not something that you would do every day.
No.
Right.
And for becoming a guy, guys are just inherently much easier to dress. And so for me, it does take to do a really good Hank about an hour and a half. Sometimes I do both. I'm a drag king and a drag queen because females can be drag queens as well. And so when I do both in the same show, it takes me about 2 hours to do everything. It's a big process. And
Hank is what we call a duva.
Yes, I'm a diva.
Diva.
Yep.
Once you're dressed up, what comes on or goes off?
Oh my gosh.
Well, I would say heels. Heels are like the last thing that I put on.
What comes on and what goes off? Boy parts go away. They get tucked up and they go away. Then we get breast implants. They're obviously silicone. You put it inside your bra. No.
Some people use rice in a bag.
I use socks, but that works for me. You know, your hair. You tuck all of your hair away inside a wig cap, and then you start pinning everything and as much as you can, because that wig cannot come off on stage.
Amen to that.
Mm-hmm. How expensive is this art?
It varies. Like, I have actually spent more on becoming a drag queen because of the wigs and the lashes and nails and the hair and everything. I mean, it is a lot. It really adds up. And I buy duct tape, oh my gosh, probably like, I don't know, once every other week. Because becoming a boy, I have to make my chest go away, and that requires a lot of duct tape.
And a lot of foundation.
And a lot of foundation, a lot of just contouring, and
so
it's a lot.
So over just an estimate from the summer here till today, I have spent about $2,000 to $3,000 on Ivana, and this is just an estimate. This is not counting that every week I have to buy new nails, and if the heel breaks, you have to buy a new pair. And, you know, this is just getting the basics.
I mean, every drag queen is different when it comes to pricing.
Mm-hmm.
I know for me, Miss California, she wears a trash bag, and
right.
she
yes,
designed
she
it, and it actually looks like something you would see on the runway. So it's different. It varies.
Yeah,
it depends on what you do with your drag.
This is true.
Mm-hmm. What does the typical audience consist of, or is there such a thing as a...
There's a lot of different audiences. Mm-hmm. I host the Diva Show in Anchorage at Mad Myrna's, and our show audience is different every single week. It could be filled with, like, a bunch of bachelorette parties, or it can be filled with, you know, the older crowd, anywhere in between. It could be a bunch of straight people. It could be LGBTQ. We never know. I think everyone loves drag shows.
Yeah, especially in Anchorage, we are such a military-based community. We often see guys that just, you know, they're not gay or anything. They're just straight people, and they come for the fun to see the show and having a good time. Our hosts, Daphne and Hank, are really, really funny and outgoing, and they engage the audience. So our audiences vary from weekend to weekend. We can never expect the same audience two weekends in a row.
I would say probably 80 to 90% of our audience are straight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On the weekly. Yep.
I think the consensus is wanting to see a dude in a dress.
Or a girl in
a
dude's clothes.
Or a girl in a dude's clothes.
So,
So tonight there's going to be a lot of lip syncing. What songs do you lip sync with?
It depends. On the weekend, I try not to repeat my numbers. I just want to make sure that I'm doing lip syncing to something that the public is going to, you know, engage with, something that is going to be fun and upbeat and get everybody, maybe not off their feet, but, you know, clapping and singing along and, you know, just get them going and having a lot of fun.
The name of the game is entertainment, and I always have numbers that are either amazingly upbeat, happy. You just want to get people on their feet and happy, and that is my main goal, to entertain and to put a smile on your face. That is why I do this. I want to put smile on everybody's faces and also confusion, because they will have no idea what Hank is.
I do both lip syncing and live, so you'll catch me sing live tomorrow and lip sync as well.
Correct.
That brings me to a question. So it's fun confusing people.
It is for Hank, because I do both a drag queen and a drag king on the days where I start off as Hank and then I go away for like 3-4 numbers and come out as this beautiful 6'5" drag queen. It really confuses everybody. I have so many people who are massively confused. They're like, wait, what? I thought you were a guy, but now you're a drag queen? Wait, what? It's fantastic, and I think it's probably the most fun I've had, just confusing the heck out of people.
Yeah. Every weekend after our show, we do a little meet and greet with, you know, we all stand up on stage and do a standing ovation and just take the chance to take and pictures with the audience and meet them. And then some of them come to you and they're like, wait, you're actually a guy now that I see you closer.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were an actual woman dancing on stage. So it's really fun, and it really makes you think, wow, do I really look that good?
Yep.
And there's a difference. Tonight's show is more locals, and tomorrow night it's the professionals.
Correct. We're giving the chance for local performers to come and have fun and entertain. And the winner tonight will be performing with us tomorrow night, which is when we will all be performing for you guys.
I had a question just off the top of my head, and I forgot it completely.
That's okay.
That's all right.
Tomorrow night, Heather, what can you announce the most, please?
So tonight at the Rendezvous, the doors open at 7 o'clock, and the show begins at 8:30. And again, that's the locals' night, so the local divas will be here performing. And that's just a donation to the 4As. And then tomorrow night, Saturday night, is at the Rockwell. Again, doors open at 7. It begins at 8:30, and that's the Anchorage Divas, along with the winner from the local show tonight. So and we also have a silent auction tomorrow night. So we hope everybody can come. It's so much fun. Everybody has a great time, and it's for a really important cause for the 4As to help provide services to people living with HIV and AIDS and to get the prevention word out there.
I figured out what my question was.
Oh, okay.
Let's say somebody really is inspired and wants to get into this. What kind of websites or what kind of catalogs can people get?
There's a plethora of things that you can do for research, but, you know, there's YouTube and there's you can always, if someone was coming into this for the first time, I would say talk to a drag queen, see, you know, what they could do or what advice they can give you for starting, and look up YouTube videos. There's so thousands of videos out there on how to, you know.
Yeah, that's how I tried to look more manly. I just looked online. I'm like, okay, how do I make my front area go away and look like a man? And so I looked on YouTube, and there is lots. You can also just look on Facebook and friend, you know, people who are drag queens, drag kings.
Exactly. I mean, we're so lucky that drag is so mainstream nowadays that for me, I started, you know, I didn't really have somebody to tell me this is what you need to do until I actually was into it, like 3 months after. But how I started was, you know, I want to do it. If I'm going to do it, how do I do it? Get on your computer, go to Google, how to do this, how to pin up your wig, how to make your eyes look like a woman, how to contour your face, how to draw on boobs. I mean, it's breasts, I'm sorry.
It's definitely a learning process.
It's
you kind of figure it out on your
process,
own and learn what you like or what you perceive.
But if you're lucky to be in a community of drag queens and drag kings, they will definitely give you pointers and tell you, you're doing this right, keep doing it, or you're doing this wrong, and this is what you need to improve, will help you, which is, in my case, that's I've been really lucky to have these ladies.
I mean, I would say that there really isn't no right or wrong way of doing drag. It's all about expressing yourself and having fun.
I'm still growing and changing every time I do it. Change something a little bit, tweak it, make it a little better.
Now, there's three performers in the studio with me now. How many more are there to complement your show?
There are two that got held back, but they will be here today.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
We love Juneau. We love coming here every year. It's a great experience, and the people here are so welcoming and friendly.
And please come see us. We
look forward to seeing you guys again.
We want to meet everybody.
It's my first time to Juneau, and I'm having a blast. Everything is so beautiful. Like Kelly said, everyone is so welcoming and warming. The South, I mean, South has nothing on this, you know. I love it here so far. And we are excited to see all of you to come to our show tonight, so please do.
Heather, one more time, the website, please.
The website is www.alaskan.org.
All right, thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 25th of September, 2015. It's the birthday of the man who said, "Most men are a little better than their circumstances give them a chance to be." The novelist William Faulkner, born New Albany, Mississippi, 1897. Like to get up early in the morning, eat eggs and broiled steak for breakfast, get a pot of coffee, take his tobacco and pipe, and go up to his study, where he went inside and took off the doorknob and carried it inside with him, where he wrote his novels by hand on large sheets of paper and then typed them out with two fingers on an old Underwood portable. In a 4-year span, he published some of his best works: Sartorus, The Sound and the Fury, As I Lay Dying, Sanctuary, and Light in August, all between 1929 and 1932. It's the birthday of the poet and cartoonist Shel Silverstein, born in Chicago, 1930, He said as a kid he wanted to be popular with girls, but he couldn't play ball and he couldn't dance, so he started to draw and write. He was drafted into the Army, wrote cartoons for Stars and Stripes. After the war, went to work for Playboy magazine, contributed there for 20 years. It was an editor in New York who suggested that he try to write for children, and he went on to write some of the best-known children's books of our time, Lafcadio, The Lion Who Shot Back, and The Giving Tree, and his book of children's poems, Where the Sidewalk Ends, one of the best-selling volumes of poetry of all time. And it was on this day, 1981, Sandra Day O'Connor was sworn in as a justice in the Supreme Court, first woman to hold that office. She graduated from Stanford Law School, 1952, top of her class, couldn't find a law firm that would give her a job because she was a woman. So she moved to Arizona, opened up her own law practice, became active in the Republican Party, became majority leader of the Arizona State Senate, then was appointed to the Court of Appeals, and 2 years later, President Reagan appointed her to the Supreme Court. Here's a poem for today by Evan Boland entitled Nocturne. After a friend has gone, I like the feel of it, the house at night, everyone asleep, the way it draws in like atmosphere or evening. 1 o'clock, a floral teapot and a raisin scone, a tray waits to be taken down, the landing light is off, the clock strikes, the cat comes into his own, mysterious on the stairs, a black ambivalence around the legs of button-back chairs, an insinuation to be set beside the red spoon and the salt-glazed cup, the saucer with a thick spill of tea which scalds off easily under the tap. Time is a tick, a purr, a drop. The spider on the dining room window has fallen asleep. Among complexities, as I will, once the doors are bolted and the keys tested and the switch turned up of the kitchen light, which made outside in the back garden an electric room, a domestication of closed daisies and architecture, instant and improbable. Nocturne, a poem by Evan Boland from An Origin Like Water, published by Norton, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering the weekly poetry podcast, Poetry Off the Shelf, featuring contemporary American poets, readings, reviews, and more. Subscriptions at poetryfoundation.org/poetrypodcast. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 29 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to Juno Afternoon. Our next guest is Seth Kendner. He's doing a book signing tomorrow at 3:30 at Hearthside Books in the Night Mall store. He's got previous books, Ordinary Wolves and Shopping for Porcupine. Both have been well received. His new book, Swallowed by the Great Land and Other Dispatches from the Great Land, is on the phone with me now. Seth, thank you very much for coming by.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. I hope you can hear me. I'm sitting in a pavilion in Talkeetna.
You're doing fine. So you spent your early years.
Sure.
You spent your early years in a place not normally typical for a Caucasian. You want to talk about growing up and how you got started in writing?
Yeah, I grew up in a sod igloo along the Kobe up there. I was pretty dyslexic, so my brother and dad and mom read more than I did, and then eventually I learned how to read, but I certainly never had an interest in being a writer or even a thought that I could. I went to college eventually and not for a degree, but hoping to find a girlfriend. And I took a creative writing class hoping it would be easy. And that was pretty much, you know, the first half of the story. After that, I just didn't want to give up since I'd already started.
What do you write more in the morning or in the evening, or does it matter?
Oh, I wish it was that scheduled. I like moving and being outside, and I really like physical labor and work. And so I'd rather shovel dog crap out of the neighbor's yard than write. So pretty hard to make a schedule or stick with it, I guess. But definitely seasonally there is a difference. Summer I'm on the go, and winter, you know, I can get pinned down more by weather.
Your book has been called A Mosaic of All Life on the Tundra. Did you start the book knowing it was going to be a collection of stories?
Say that again, Jeff. I apologize, but the connection sort of went away.
Your work has been called A Mosaic of All Life on the Tundra. Did you start the book and write it knowing it was going to be a collection of stories?
Oh, in this case, I wrote each story separately, and I kind of live in a little bit of a writerly void where I'm not rubbing shoulders with other writers, and you know, a lot of people I talk to don't actually read that much, and so I never know whether people are reading my stuff when it comes out. And when I traveled to Cordova and Homer and Juneau and other places, I got told people told me they liked these stories and asked me to put it all together in this Swallowed by the Great Land and compilation there. It's actually turned out, I'm pretty happy with it, actually.
Do you have a favorite story in it?
Well, I do like the one, I guess it's called Diomede Dichotomies, which is about going to a little Diomede and working with the kids there. And I like the title story, Swallowed by the Great Land, pretty well. And then definitely Howl, which is, you can read it.
How did you come up with the title, Swallowed by the Great Land?
That was the title of that one essay that came out in the Anchorage Daily News, and that is the story about the, probably heard about the German survivalist that got went missing on the Amble River maybe 3 years ago. And so I ended up getting involved with the family and searching, and I wrote a piece about it, and that was the title of that piece there, yeah.
Does it affect your relationship with other people knowing they might be in a book?
I've gotten those comments, sure, yeah. I think it's hard to tell whether people are joking or are serious. I think, you know, the majority of people kind of like the idea of being written about, but then people are always quick to jump on a writer and say, you know, my jacket wasn't red. My jacket was green. And you're kind of always in danger of messing it up, I guess. I don't have very good memory, so I do the best I can. I'm pretty fanatical about getting it right, but people are waiting to jump on you for sure.
Do you do a lot of rewriting?
I do a ton of rewriting, Jeff. It's actually a disease. I write the, and then I look at it and try to remember if that's how you spell it.
How long does it take you to, once you start, do you stop easily, or do you just hit?
You know, in a compilation of stories, it's hard to come up with a number like that. I'm working on a young adult novel called Wolverine School. It'll be out next fall. Random House just bought it, and it's about 100,000 words, and I've been working on it for 5 years, and I probably have another year.
Do you like short-form writing?
I only wrote poems when I was drinking more than a lot, and I was sort of addicted to Bukowski's poems, and so mine were just cheap, watered-down imitations of that. Not good, for sure.
Your book, Shopping Swallowed by the Great Land, features stories about people, community, subsistence hunting, and global warming. Want to talk to me about one of those, please?
Well, I guess I write about that stuff. I do feel that, debt to the land for all those years when I sort of woke up and walked out and found food and wood and whatever else. And so I do write about the changes which I feel are dangerous to the animals and the people, and maybe a sadness for, times are changing in Alaska. One of these days I think I'll just write a romance or something a little bit shallower.
Have you ever thought about a film score?
When Ordinary Wolves came out, I was really mortified that they might try to make it into a movie and sort of screw it up and make life look cheap. And since then, I guess I thought, if they wanted to make a movie from that, I could just step aside and see how it came out. Maybe it'd be okay. All these reality shows and those folks that occasionally get a hold of me, I'm not much interested in any of that drama.
I've been talking with Seth Kantner. He's the author of Swallowed by the Great Land and Other Dispatches. He'll be having a book signing tomorrow at Hearthside Books in the Nugget Mall at 3:30. Anything you'd like to mention before if we're too long?
Yeah, Jeff, my understanding is I'll probably be doing a reading and a signing and maybe show slides. I'm also working on another book. I'm working on two more right now, and one's a nonfiction photo and full-length narrative about caribou. And so good chance I'll be showing slides of caribou at the mall there, probably a short reading and then a signing, and that would be tomorrow at 3:30. Otherwise, I'm just excited to get to Juneau and see some friends and see some mountains.
All right, Seth Kantner, thank you very much for coming on the air with me today.
Oh, sure, Jeff. Appreciate it. Good to talk to you.
This is Bird Note. Look at that gull drifting across the sky. It seems to move through the air without effort. How does it stay aloft and fly so easily? Natural adaptations have given it a strong yet lightweight body, and for their weight, its feathers are among the strongest structures in the world. But aren't a bird's bones, like ours, heavy? Let's take a closer look. That red-tailed hawk circling overhead has hollow bones strengthened by struts, light but strong. The bones of frigate birds, masters of the air, weigh less than their feathers. To further reduce weight while maintaining essential strength, many bird bones are fused. For example, a bird's hand and fingers are made up of only 6 bones. In addition, the ribs of a bird are joined to other bones to make a rigid box that supports those long wings, just as the wings support the bird. And finally, the bird just wouldn't fly that well if not for the streamlining provided by its sleek feather coat. With its body thus supremely adapted for the air, the Arctic tern, one of the superstars of migration, can travel across thousands of miles of open ocean each year in effortless flight. Learn more about birds when you visit birdnote.org.
It's about 20 minutes before the hour, and you are tuned to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Jeff Brown. I'm your host for today. In the studio with me next is Jennifer Walker. You're with Forest Kindergarten. It's a nature-based program for young children. Jennifer, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
You're welcome.
You want to give us an overview of your service, please?
Sure. So I've started a service that's called Forest Song Nature School, and we offer forest kindergarten programming. It's for ages 3 through 7, and we're outdoors rain or shine. So the kids are engaging in unstructured playtime out in our wonderful Juneau rainforest, regardless of weather.
Why'd you start it?
I just really felt there was a need for something like this in our city. We're blessed with so many wonderful wild spaces, and yet our children don't have as much access to them as is good for them and as I would like. So as I started to learn about forest kindergartens, the movement's really strong in Europe. And they've got a bunch in the lower 48. I just thought, man, we need something like this here.
What's a typical day consist of?
The children arrive at my house, and we take a short walk. It's about 5 or 10 minutes, depending on the day. If there's lots of slugs, it takes us a long time. And we walk up to our spot in the woods. It's near a creek. We start the day with a song, and then the children really, it's the whole program is child-led, and so they choose what they're interested in playing with. A lot of them immediately are jumping into the creek. We have tools with us occasionally, something like binoculars or buckets and shovels, so that they can explore and engage with those. But they've got their favorite little spots. Once they've been there for a couple weeks, they've got a stump that becomes a train for them that they love to climb on, or a log that's an airplane. And so much of the day is spent, you know, with them choosing their activities and engaging in that play. When moments come along where they do discover something like a new plant or a spider or a snail, part of what I love so much is I get to share those really cool facts so that they are learning the names of our plants here, you know, in Juneau. They're learning what's edible and what's not. And then we have a snack time about an hour and a half in. So we start at 9, snack time's at 10:30. They go back to playing, and then at noon, some of the kids leave. Some of them stay for lunch and one more hour of play.
How many kids do you have room for?
We can take up to 8, but there's also each teacher can bring their own children. So sometimes it would be 10 kids, 2 teachers, and 8 kids.
What kind of environmental knowledge background do you have?
My background comes mostly just from passion. And so I grew up in the mountains above Boulder, and my mom would always take us on walks with the flower book, you know, the plant book, and we would look up the species names. And so it's always just been a part of who I am to know what things are out there. When I moved to Juneau, I felt displaced not knowing the names of things. And so, you know, immediately bought books and started learning. And so a lot of it is just passion driven, or any chance I get, you know, I'm out at the glacier taking their hikes, asking the rangers questions, bugging all of the naturalists we have in town for more knowledge, because I'm just so inspired with it, or inspired by it, and passionate about learning about those things.
I'm wondering who has more fun, you or the kids?
I truly feel like this is the best job ever. It took me a long time to come around to it, but I look forward to each day, and I just can't believe that, you know, I get to do such an amazingly enjoyable thing.
How long have you been doing it?
So I started with a tiny daycare, and I started transitioning to forest kindergarten, which means I would take them out for that 3 to 4 hour time stretch every day back in March. And so it was, you know, my 2 to 4 daycare kids that I would have, plus my son. And we did that from March until May. And then in May, I started with official forest kindergarten enrollment. So through the summer, I had kids coming to me twice a day. And now in the fall, we're in our regular school year. So we've got some returning and some new kids signed up. Right now, we're on Mondays and Wednesdays.
And where are you located?
We're in the mountainside area, so kind of above Twin Lakes.
All right. And people drop their kids off with you and then?
Yep. They drop them off at my house and pick them up at the street access, which is right near our trailhead.
Is there a phone number, website, email?
Yes. My website is forestsongnatureschool.org, and my phone number is 500-8929.
Jennifer Walker, thank you for coming down today. Do you have anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
I do just want to add that the research behind forest kindergartens is really strong. They're showing that kids who engage in nature have stronger immune systems, their vision tends to be better, they're healthier overall. Children who've participated in forest kindergartens tend to do better academically when they do hit school. So it's just kind of neat to bring the excitement of the outdoors together with these young children.
Jennifer, thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
Support comes from Alaska Island Community Services. If you're a parent and you smoke, here's what one child has to say about this.
I wish you'd quit smoking because there's so much of my life I want you to be a part of, like taking me to wrestling practice, teaching me to throw baseball for Little League, catching my first derby fish, watching me graduate from high school, and watching my kids, your grandchildren, grow and play. I wish you would stop smoking because there's so much both of us will miss out on.
This message brought to you by the Partnership for Tobacco-Free Southeast and Search.
Support for this station comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, located at 105 Savico Road in Douglas. Treadwell Arena is now open for the 2015-2016 season with a 5-day schedule. More information at juno.org/parkrec/icerink or call 586-4540.
It's about 4 minutes before the hour, and you are tuned into Juno Afternoon. Next on the program, featuring something that was in rooms earlier this month and was broadcast last night on KTUO. If you missed that broadcast, you can go to our website, www.ktuo.org. Follow the program's link to Mud Rooms.
Our final speaker of the evening is Tori Talley. For her bio, Tori asked her friends to say one thing about her in a sentence. Here's the result. Tori is currently a student at UAS with no real idea of what she's going to major in. She is a nature and animal-loving weirdo, but in the good way. She's an avid hiker who likes to have intellectual conversations about the finer things in life. Tori is known for her extremely eclectic slash weird taste in music. She's an adventure addict and wannabe traveler whose next stop is Costa Rica for a volunteer trip. Tori tries to live organically and eco-friendly and is obsessed with adding spinach, not kale, spinach to basically everything. Please help me welcome Tori. Okay, so before I start my story, I'm going to tell you one little thing about myself. I'm extremely impulsive. Like, the first thought that comes to mind, I run with it, and there's no talking me out of it. And also, I change my mind really quickly. Like, I go so fast, it's unbelievable. Okay, so a couple months ago, my parents went out of town and asked me to stay behind and take care of their house and pets and car. And so for a poor college student, this is great because I get my house and I get to use their car. And a couple months ago, I did not have my own car. So this meant a lot of freedom for me, which is great because I love doing outdoorsy things. And so that meant I got to go out the road or out North Douglas. And so on this particular Thursday night, I decided that I was going to go bike Herbert Glacier. And I was going to take my parents' 10-pound schnoodle, which is a schnauzer poodle mix, with me. And just for the record, she is not a good protecting dog. She is afraid of bubbles and chickens and plastic bags. She will not protect you from anything. And so we get in the car and start driving out to Herbert Glacier, and in the back of my mind, you know, when your parents' voice comes in your head, and my mom came into my head saying, Tori, don't go out by yourself. But, I mean, it's Juno. What's the worst that can happen? I've never run into any kind of bad people or anything when I'm out on the trails. So I ignored it, but I actually texted a friend just so someone knew where I was, and I texted my friend and told her what time I was leaving and when I'd be back. And we got out to Herbert Glacier, and it was about 6:20, and so I was like, okay, I can be back there and back by 8 o'clock. This will be perfect. And I see one other car, and so I just, like, prepared myself. Okay, so I'll probably see someone else on the trail. This will be perfect. Didn't worry about it too much again because I'd never had a problem with anyone on trails. I'd never seen a creepy person. I'd gone out by myself plenty of times, and I had my guard dog, Pepper, and so I took off my bike, and we started biking down the trail, and by now it's 6:30, you know, so it's getting darker, and it's cloudy, but not raining, so beautiful Juno day. And we get in the woods, and it's completely roofed over, you know, like, so it's even darker in the woods, and I pulled over to take pictures for Instagram, obviously, of the Devil's Club, because it was really beautiful, and the lighting was good, so I stopped and realized, like, wow, the Devil's Club, that's really, like, we live in a really lush, beautiful place. Like, you really can't see through there. But, again, I wasn't thinking anything of it. And so I get back on my bike and
continue biking on, and about 2 miles into the bike ride, and I'm thinking, like, it's kind of weird. I haven't seen people coming back, and they didn't have a bike rack or anything, a little tiny car, so they're not biking. So I'm wondering, like, I should have run into someone by now, but it's just kind of a fleeting thought. Don't think too much of it. So I keep on biking, and probably half mile in, I see something, like, a couple hundred feet ahead. I see some man, is what it looks like, in the side, like right in the kind of lush, beautiful Devil's Club. And I see like a big guy, like it looks like he's wearing big old Carhartts. And so I was like, that's weird. Okay, maybe he's picking berries because it's that time, but I didn't really think much of it. And I get a little bit closer and I see two black bears, or not black bears, I see two dogs running around him. And so I'm like, okay, well, that's like, maybe they're just having fun. Like, but he's in the middle of like Devil's Club. That cannot be comfortable. And so I kind of ignore it and I keep biking. And then all of a sudden I realize this guy is like folded over on himself. And so I'm out in the woods by myself and it's probably 7:30. And so I don't know exactly what to do. So I'm like, okay, you know, he could be a serial killer because that's where serial killers hide, in the middle of the woods. So I'm not going to stop, and I'm just going to put my dog on the other side because there's the two labs running around him, and we're just going to bike past him, not look at him, but we're going to scream, hey, how are you? Because that's a nice Juno thing to do. So I speed past him. I speed past him as fast as I can, which is not very fast, but not looking at him, I scream, hi, how are you? And I don't get a reply. And so I scream, hello, like kind of annoyed because that's kind of rude not to reply. And so we're about 200 feet past, and I'm like, okay, now something's wrong. And so I ditch my bike and I, like, he's like, he must be passed out in the woods. How do you pass out in the woods? But anyways, and so I am like, trying to remember my CPR training and my first aid, and I don't remember any of it. And I'm like, I can't give this guy mouth to mouth. I don't have one of those protective bag thingies, and he's a really big guy. I can't carry him back, and oh my God, someone's gonna die on my watch. Like, can't you go to jail for that? And I'm just like, oh my God. And I'm walking over at him and really worried about this guy who I've determined is no longer a serial killer. And so I'm walking over to him, not paying attention to him, trying to get my dog to stay back because she's afraid of all living things and would be afraid of his animals. And so by now I'm like sprinting over to him, like he needs my help. I'm gonna see if he's passed out, what's the matter? So I run over to him and I reach out to this guy. And all of a sudden, one of his dogs darts up the tree right next to him. And I'm like, and so I, like, I have never seen a dog do that. And then all of a sudden, the other one darts up another tree. And that's like two of them. He must have trained them really well. Like, I can't, like, and so then I'm like, what, that? Dogs don't do that, but another animal does. And so I'm about 3 feet away from this big old guy, and my hand's in the Devil's Club, and I look over at him, and he turns his head around. It's a mama bear, and those were her two cubs. I just ran out of mama bear and her two cubs. So as I'm starting to tear up and shaking and, oh my God, I'm going to die. It's a serial killer of a different type. It's mad at me. I slowly back up and say, it's okay. It's okay. We're okay. This is good. This is good. I back up. I take about 15 steps back, and the mom gets up and puffs up her chest and looks at me and then turns around, and the babies follow. And I thank the Lord. And so I pick up my dog and get on my bike and book it back to my house. Well, to the car, actually. Book it back to the car. And I realize I'm so lucky to have been the one that got away.
A storytelling recorded earlier this month as part of the Mud Rumors series of events. We broadcast that last night at 7 o'clock on KTWO News, and if you'd like to hear it again, you can go to our website, ktwo.org, and follow the program link to Mudroom's program for last night.
The Masters of Public Administration at the University of Alaska Southeast comes to you where you live and work in Alaska. Online classes combine the structure of the classroom with the accessibility of an e-learning program. Get an interactive, supportive, and high-quality education. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by University of Alaska Southeast School of Management.
Tuning into a June afternoon for today. The forecast for tonight, showers early in the evening, then rain. Low temperatures around 44 degrees. Southeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Forecast for Saturday, rain with high temperatures around 50 degrees. Sunday, rain, high temperatures around 51 degrees. Looks like the forecast through next Wednesday, rain likely. Coming up next Monday on a June afternoon, Scott Burt will be your host. Kim Hecox will be here to highlight his new book, Jimmy Bluefeather. Pat Race will be here with a preview of Wednesday's Juno Forum on Alaska's fiscal future. We'll get an update on Perseverance Theater's current production, The Tragedy of Othello. We'll also hear about activities at the Juno Douglas City Museum with Margie Hamburger. That Writer's Almanac, Marinette Music and More, this Monday on a Juno afternoon.
The 26th annual Juno Barn Dance season kicks off this Saturday, September 26th, 7:30 to 11 p.m. at St. Anne's Parish Hall downtown. The Groundhogs Old Time String Band will provide live music and the incredible Susie Kendig will teach and call conference square dances for all abilities. As always, you don't need experience or a partner. Discounts for students and seniors free for JVs and AmeriCorps, sponsored by Juno International Folk Dancers. Barn Dance, Saturday.